Hi there, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the New LifeSpring Family Audio Bible, episode 234. My name is Steve Webb, you know your name, and I am your host. There are some seemingly very difficult passages in today's reading of Judges 10 and 11. Let's read the chapters, and then we'll tackle the difficulties. Let's begin. Judges chapter 10. After Abimelech's death, Tola, the son of Pua and grandson of Dodo, came to free Israel. He was from the tribe of Issachar and lived in Shamer in the hill country of Ephraim. He was Israel's leader for 23 years, then he died and was buried at Shamer. After Tola came Jair from Gilead. He led Israel for 22 years. He had 30 sons who rode 30 donkeys. They had 30 cities in the land of Gilead, which are still called the villages of Jair. Jair died and was buried at Canaan. Once again, the Israelites sinned against the Lord by worshiping the Baals and the Astartes, as well as the gods of Syria, of Sidon, of Moab, of Ammon, and of Philistia. They abandoned the Lord and stopped worshiping Him. So the Lord became angry with the Israelites and let the Philistines and the Ammonites conquer them. For 18 years they oppressed and persecuted all the Israelites who lived in Amorite country east of the Jordan River in Gilead. The Ammonites even crossed the Jordan to fight the tribes of Judah, Benjamin, and Ephraim. Israel was in great distress. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord and said, "We have sinned against you, for we left you, our God, and worshipped the Baals." The Lord gave them this answer: "The Egyptians, the Amorites, the Ammonites, the Philistines, the Sidonians, the Amalekites, and the Maonites oppressed you in the past, and you cried out to me. Did I not save you from them? But you still left me and worshipped other gods, so I am not going to rescue you again. Go and cry out to the gods you have chosen. Let them rescue you when you get in trouble." But the people of Israel said to the Lord, "We have sinned. Do whatever you like, but please save us today." So they got rid of their foreign gods and worshipped the Lord, and he became troubled over Israel's distress. Then the Ammonite army prepared for battle and camped in Gilead. The people of Israel came together and camped at Mizpah in Gilead. There, the people and the leaders of the Israelite tribes asked one another, "Who will lead the fight against the Ammonites? Whoever does will be the leader of everyone in Gilead." Judges chapter 11. Jephthah, a brave soldier from Gilead, was the son of a prostitute. His father Gilead had other sons by his wife, and when they grew up, they forced Jephthah to leave home. They told him, "You will not inherit anything from our father. You are the son of another woman." Jephthah fled from his brothers and lived in the land of Tob. There he attracted a group of worthless men, and they went around with him. It was some time later that the Ammonites went to war against Israel. When this happened, the leaders of Gilead went to bring Jephthah back from the land of Tob. They told him, "Come and lead us so that we can fight the Ammonites." But Jephthah answered, "You hated me so much that you forced me to leave my father's house. Why come to me now that you're in trouble?" They said to Jephthah, "We are turning to you now because we want you to go with us and fight the Ammonites and lead all the people of Gilead." Jephthah said to them, "If you take me back home to fight the Ammonites and the Lord gives me victory, I will be your ruler." They replied, "We agree. The Lord is our witness." So Jephthah went with the leaders of Gilead, and the people made him their ruler and leader. Jephthah stated his terms at Mizpah in the presence of the Lord. Then Jephthah sent messengers to the king of Ammon to say, "What is your quarrel with us? Why have you invaded our country?" The king of Ammon answered Jephthah's messengers, "When the Israelites came out of Egypt, they took away my land from the Arnon River to the Jabbok River and the Jordan River. Now you must give it back peacefully." Jephthah sent messengers back to the king of Ammon with this answer, "It is not true that Israel took away the land of Moab or the land of Ammon. This is what happened. When the Israelites left Egypt, they went through the desert to the Gulf of Aqaba and came to Kadesh. Then they sent messengers to the king of Edom to ask permission to go through his land, but the king of Edom would not let them. They also asked the king of Moab, but neither would he let them go through his land. So the Israelites stayed at Kadesh. Then they went on through the desert, going around the land of Edom and the land of Moab, until they came to the east side of Moab, on the other side of the Arnon River. They camped there, but they did not cross the Arnon because it was the boundary of Moab. Then the Israelites sent messengers to Sihon, the Amorite king of Heshbon, and asked him for permission to go through his country to their own land. But Sihon would not let Israel do it. He brought his whole army together, camped at Jahaz, and attacked Israel. But the Lord, the God of Israel, gave the Israelites victory over Sihon and his army. So the Israelites took possession of all the territory of the Amorites who lived in that country. They occupied all the Amorite territory from the Arnon in the south to the Jabbok in the north, and from the desert on the east to the Jordan on the west. So it was the Lord, the God of Israel, who drove out the Amorites for his people, the Israelites. Are you going to try to take it back? You can keep whatever your god Chemosh has given you, but we are going to keep everything that the Lord our God has taken for us. Do you think you're any better than Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab? He never challenged Israel, did he? Did he ever go to war against us? For 300 years, Israel has occupied Heshbon and Aroer, and the towns around them, and all the cities on the banks of the Arnon River. Why haven't you taken them back in all this time? No, I have not done you any wrong. You are doing wrong by making war on me. The Lord is the judge. He will decide today between the Israelites and the Ammonites. But the king of Ammon paid no attention to this message from Jephthah. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Jephthah. He went through Gilead and Manasseh and returned to Mizpah in Gilead and went on to Ammon. Jephthah promised the Lord, "If you will give me victory over the Ammonites, I will burn as an offering the first person that comes out of my house to meet me when I come back from the victory. I will offer that person to you as a sacrifice." Jephthah crossed the river to fight the Ammonites, and the Lord gave him victory. He struck at them from Aroer to the area around Minnith, 20 cities in all, and as far as Abel-Karamim. There was a great slaughter, and the Ammonites were defeated by Israel. When Jephthah went back home to Mizpah, there was his daughter coming out to meet him, dancing and playing the tambourine. She was his only child. When he saw her, he tore his clothes in sorrow and said, "Oh, my daughter, you're breaking my heart. Why must it be you that causes me pain? I've made a solemn promise to the Lord, and I cannot take it back." She told him, "If you have made a promise to the Lord, do what you said you would do to me, since the Lord has given you revenge on your enemies, the Ammonites." But she asked her father, "Do this one thing for me. Leave me alone for 2 months, so that I can go with my friends to wander in the mountains and grieve that I must die a virgin." He told her to go and sent her away for 2 months. She and her friends went up into the mountains and grieved because she was going to die unmarried and childless. After 2 months, she came back to her father. He did what he had promised the Lord, and she died still a virgin. This was the origin of the custom in Israel that the Israelite women would go out for 4 days every year to grieve for the daughter of Jephthah of Gilead. May God richly bless the reading of His Word and open our hearts to understand these difficult passages. So there were two things in these two chapters that seem difficult to reconcile when we think of a loving and compassionate God. The first is in chapter 10. God seems unwilling to save Israel. They have turned away from Him several times in the past, and it seems like He's had His fill. And He tells them, "Let them rescue you when you get in trouble." Well, they of course know that these gods are false, worthless, and unable to help them. So they confess their sins once again, and they throw away their foreign gods, and they worship the Lord. And then their cries move God. Now remember, God is omniscient. That means He knows everything. He knew that He would again save them, but He knew that they needed to come to the place where they were truly and completely repentant. He didn't want them to experience an easy grace. Parents understand this well, I think. I can think of many times when my boys were young that I would catch them doing something wrong, and they would confess, hoping to avoid the wrath of Dad. "I'm sorry, Dad." But I knew that they were only repentant because they got caught, not that they were truly sorry for the transgression. And that's how Israel was in this situation. They were hurting and tired after 18 years of oppression, and they quite naturally wanted out. But God knew that their cries for help were not motivated by a desire to return to Him. They only wanted relief from their oppressors. He needed to bring them to the point where they understood that their only hope was in true devotion to the true God. It is only then that a right relationship can exist between God and man. And in that relationship, there is true happiness and peace. Separate from God is always fraught with disaster and woe. Our loving Father always does whatever necessary to bring us to the point where we see that so that we will make the right choice. The second difficulty comes in chapter 11, when Jephthah makes the vow to God that he will sacrifice as a burnt offering the first person to greet him when he returns in victory. This is a passage with some controversy among Bible scholars. All agree that this was an ill-advised vow, but the controversy centers on whether Jephthah actually sacrificed his daughter as a burnt offering or sacrificed her in service to the Lord for the rest of her life, part of which was the obligation not to marry or bear children. It goes without saying that it would cause Jephthah a great deal of grief to offer her as a burnt offering, but since she was an only child, it would also be a hard thing to know that there would be no descendants to carry on the family. Whatever actually happened with Jephthah and his daughter, it must clearly be stated that God was never in agreement with human sacrifice. Never. As a matter of fact, human sacrifice was one of the reasons that he had the children of Israel drive out the original occupants of the Promised Land. God always declared human sacrifice as an abomination. Our takeaway here is twofold. One, do not be too quick to make vows to God. Carefully consider the consequences of your vow. And two, once you make a vow, whatever the cost, you are obligated to carry it out. We're much too quick in this modern day to forget vows we make, not just vows to God, but to man as well. A vow is a solemn promise. When we get married, we exchange vows with our spouse, with God as the supreme witness. How often are those vows broken? Far too many times, and the emotional and spiritual costs are great. Do you have any comments on these passages? I'd love to hear them. Write to me at steve@lifespringmedia.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at bible.lifespringmedia.com. Look for episode number 234. I'll see you tomorrow. Until then, may God bless you richly. I'm Steve Webb.